Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll talk about elections in Africa in the year 2020. With us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula joining us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting us, and hello to our viewers.
Pleasure is mine. And as I said, we're looking back at year 2020 elections in Africa. Despite the problems and difficulties of COVID-19, still African countries had elections, some of them fair, some of them had question marks on them. Burundi held elections. Malawi had a successful election. So, gentlemen, Vincent, your general assessment on elections in Africa in year 2020.
Yeah, first we have to say it has been an amazing year of elections. This is perhaps one of the years that there have been so many elections from west to east to south. Elections in Guinea, we had elections in Burundi, Ivory Coast, elections in Tanzania, elections in Malawi, and now elections in Ghana that just ended, and they're yet to determine who is the winner. So it was quite a year in terms of elections, but running through those elections, quite a number of things were learned, because when you look at how the elections were conducted in a number of those countries, if you start with Guinea, then go to Ivory Coast, and then talk about Tanzania and Burundi, in all those situations, there was a lot of tension, and the tension was occasioned by intimidation of the opposition members. There was suppression of the media. There were protests that led to killings, for example, in Guinea. There were also people killed in Tanzania. We had the shutting down of social media and media outlets, including also even mainstream media was restricted in a number of these countries. And so what we saw is a demonstration of how fragile the democratic systems in Africa are, how fragile the journey towards a real democracy in Africa is, and how easily even the little gains can be reversed with just one other election. There were some bright spots, of course. Malawi, after the court ruled that there had to be a redo or a do-over, we saw a fairly peaceful election where the opposition member who had been denied the victory, Chakwera, eventually emerged the president. And I think that second election kind of was a much better election and demonstration of what an election should be like. Although it had to happen after a lot of protests, the court action was actually mostly through the pressure of the citizens. And also now the one that is yet to be determined, the Ghana elections. Of course, the incumbent might be looking like he's a bit ahead according to the latest numbers, also has taken place in a fairly orderly manner. And as it has been the last few years, Ghana has been seen as the bastion of stability in the West African, very turbulent and unstable region. So that is the overall picture, but there are quite a number of things we can talk about.
Suleiman, your general take?
I agree with Vincent 100%. And one can note that generally on the continent, much as COVID was a shock, it was compulsory. It was inevitable that countries have to overcome the shock and come to the understanding that elections were so important to the nation, because they are a source of national cohesion, source of stability. So there was no way many of them could be postponed without proper justification, because they touch national cohesion, they touch stability, they touch economic development. It is very, very important that countries get proper leadership. That is why many countries had to brave the conditions and carry out the elections. The way Vincent has said, We have had the bad, ugly, and some of the good. It is unfortunate. But what it shows, as Vincent has said, it shows us that the journey is still very long. We make a few steps forward, and then we make two steps backward. There are countries which we thought they were in transition. There are countries which we thought they would build from the little they had got, but unfortunately, some of them took back steps. One of them, Tanzania. We thought that having gone through exchange of leadership for a number of years, one would have expected that Magufuli would have contributed, would have made it better, but instead he went for the worse. There was militarization of elections, there was harassment of the opposition, trumped up charges against the opposition. As a result, many of the opposition leadership now are in exile. So nobody ever expected that. We thought that with the many years that Tanzania had election, they should have improved from what they have been doing so that they go on slowly, much as it is a country dominated by one party, but we thought that the opposition was slowly making inroads, which would have helped it to come to countries like Kenya, Senegal, Ghana, South Africa, to come up to that level. But instead, it has gone rogue now. It has joined the club of outright dictators, outright rogue states, where opposition is not tolerated at all, where election becomes meaningless, where the results almost are predetermined. That is a very sad state. Then also another sad one was Ivory Coast. Ivory Coast, I mean, having gone through the experience which they have gone, over 3,000 people were killed in the fracas that went in between Gbagbo and Ouattara. One would not have expected a Ouattara to go rogue the way he had gone, to go for the third term. Yet knowing that that country has got fractures, it has got the fault lines, the north-south divide, you try to accelerate it badly, you are going to throw the country into another turmoil. I think that one also was a minus, was an ugly minus. Of course, Guinea, nothing much is expected. Also thought it would be better, but instead it disappointed. So as I've said, and as Vincent has said, where we expected that we'd be making progress, unfortunately, we have gone to the state where we are in when we are beginning 2020, which means elections are still controversial, and the people of Africa will still continue to struggle to get better leadership.
I see. Vincent, despite several countries holding elections in this difficult year, other countries decided to take the easy way out by postponing elections. And then briefly there was the case of Burundi, where the guy had kept his word, although he eventually died, and held an election of some sort. What do you make of that?
Yeah, you know, if an election was to be postponed with full agreement of all the participating, entities, all the political parties or the stakeholders, and there was a clear agreement that we need to postpone this because of the current situation for 1 year, maybe go to Parliament and get a vote on that, I think that would have been okay. Every country can make some determination of some important things in their lives. But where the person at the top makes that unilateral decision, as it happened, the Ethiopian opposition wasn't excited about the postponement of the election, at least not everybody. And in the case of countries like Burundi, where the election happened anyway, but under very difficult circumstances, I think it still undermines the whole process of democracy. Personally, I believe democracy is all about the people participating and being part of the decision making. So if there was a decision at any, at some point to either shift the election to a certain time of the year or a certain another year, as long as all parties are involved in the deliberations and finally reach that conclusion, well and good. But I think that what we've seen in all these countries is that there is only one side that seems to have the final say in whether the elections will happen and how they will happen. And then, of course, determining who can be the candidate or who should be given access to whatever they need in order to participate in a free, fair, and credible election.
Suleiman, what do you make of those who decided to take the easy route and postpone their stay in power with that election, citing the difficulties of COVID, and also on the Burundi situation?
The Burundi situation, let me start with the Burundi situation. The Burundi, it is a God-decided issue. We cannot say much about it. Yes, they have got a new leadership, but it remains the same. Unless the new leader does show or does get a proper solution for the problem, which has bedeviled Burundi, I think Burundi still is still fragile. No one knows what direction it will take. The fault lines are still there. They can widen any time, and an implosion can start again. What makes it so bad for Burundi is the region in which it finds itself. The region is so fragile. You have got a dictatorship around them. There is the DRC is fragile. Rwanda is fragile. Uganda is fragile. So Tanzania also now is becoming fragile. So you find that Burundi is also caught up in a difficult situation. It will need very good leadership to swim through the problems which we are facing, especially the traditional problems which they have had. The other countries, as Vincent has said, it was a pandemic. And many states needed to sit and get consultation on all the institutions that govern the country. If the country decides as a country, then that would be okay. I wouldn't see any problem. But when it is exclusive, it would be wrong. Like now, not only those who postponed, even those who decided to go for elections, but without consultation. For example, Uganda is one case which is so difficult and which is a mess around the continent. Because you have a president who has been in power for 34 years. He unilaterally decides to hold elections because they were due in January, but does not consult the opposition groups. He only weaponizes COVID, uses COVID as a weapon to quieten others and then organize a sham election. For example, he says it's going to be a scientific election where people are going to campaign through the media. There is no media. Most of the media is privately owned. The leaders, opposition leaders, are not allowed to access the media. They are told to campaign. Registered voters are about 17 million, and you are going to meet only 60 people in 90 days. That is impossible. So all that one is a travesty of justice in that sense. So in all these cases, with election or no elections, but where it has been done without inclusivity, it doesn't make any sense. It further goes to show a deficit in leadership, which we are experiencing on the continent.
Well, for those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, coming to you from the Voice of America. Tonight we're discussing elections in Africa in the year 2020. Our panelists are my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga. Now, Vincent, Suleiman there mentions the regions, some countries being in tough regions. But it doesn't seem that democracy or democratic values are spread across countries, because in West Africa, for instance, you have Senegal, Ghana, neighboring other countries like Ivory Coast and Guinea, which are up in flames. In East Africa, as you just mentioned, you have analysis of democracy in one country or the other, and then the rest is just not there. In Central South Africa, you have Malawi that pulled it off, but then other neighboring countries don't seem to be able to do that. So it appears good governance doesn't cross borders very well.
Well, it's very clear it does not. You know, good governance is about effective institutions. Great institutions compel leaders to govern well. The rule of law is about institutions, the application of the law equally across across the nation. What we see across the continent of Africa is that there is a lack of a goodwill among political leaders. It takes goodwill. It takes a desire for building a great country for leaders to come together and put in place institutions and organizations that will guarantee that a country will be ruled by law, and also there will be institutions that govern things like elections, and there will be systems by which you resolve problems. What we have seen is that even in a few countries where those institutions exist, they're so weak, they're so fragile. The leaders don't have the goodwill to fix those institutions because they end up being self-serving. There is something I always say. The fate of a country cannot be left in the hands of a few good men in the hope that they will do the right thing. The good men who can emerge into the positions of leadership at any point, if they really want the best for their country, have to fight to build institutions that will safeguard the citizens of a country against excesses in power. For example, if every country needed to fight to have a thoroughly independent electoral commission, you need to have an independent judiciary. You need to have full separation of powers between the executive and the other organs of government, such that when you're holding an election, the ruling party should not be having an influence over how the election is being held and determining who wins the election. The ruling party shouldn't be the one to determine how the opposition is going to conduct its campaigns and deciding who to allow and who not to allow, who to arrest and who not to arrest. This should be done by an independent electoral body that sets the rules for campaigns, that there should be a system and an institution that and make sure that all those who are participating in an election have the same access to the media, have the same access to resources that they need, and they have the same access to the space wherever they want to go, as long as they are doing that within the law. And then you need that very independent judiciary, because it gives people the confidence that if there will be something going wrong with an election, we can always go to the courts, and this can be deliberated and decided in a fair manner. And when you have that in your mind, you know that the courts are there and they're independent and they can resolve the issues, then you do not go into an election with a mindset of, breaking up into a protest, street fight to make your point about the results of an election. You can always dispute the election and go to court. You need people to have that confidence in the judiciary for them to maintain peace, to maintain order, knowing that they don't have to worry about any individual politician, any political party subverting the will of the people. So in summary, all I want to say is that there is, in those few countries we can see, where countries are looking like they're doing well, you will notice that there are determined leaders who seem to have a true desire to build institutions that will help lead their countries into a much better future beyond their time. Because you have to think beyond you in order to do good things for your country. In most of the other countries, The leaders are consumed by what they want to do for themselves and their friends, and they don't care about what happens after they leave those positions, unfortunately.
Suleiman, it appears some other countries where democracy is lacking, those leaders actually are bent on making sure that those decisions don't work at all. They fuse the judiciary into the ruling party, and the electoral commissions are part of the same process. In that case, sincerely, you can't expect a fair election.
No doubt about it, Douglas. Really, in the 21st century, it is sheer greed and primitivity for a leader to think that he can lead for more than 20 years. I mean, we have moved so far. We are in the 21st century. In South Africa, an election does not involve guns, does not involve security officials, does not involve partisan state institutions, it does not involve misuse of state institutions. It means a time to decide the leaders whom the people want. The people of South Africa from Mandela to now, the elites, the politicians, they decided that that is how South Africa should do, and they are defending it. The same in Ghana, the same in Malawi. People don't fight. An election was nullified. A new electoral commission was appointed. It took office, it organized elections, and it organized free and fair election, because there is goodwill, there is patriotism, there is awareness within the educated and the politicians in Malawi that their country need to go forward. That is what it should be.
I see.
For those countries, Douglas, which you are talking about, which have refused, it is the way Vincent has said, it is the lack of goodwill from the leadership. Because, for example, recently we have just seen in Kenya, the political leadership has just come to an agreement that they have to have a new constitution to forge a way for Kenya, because the cycle of violence will continue unless they streamline their politics. In Zanzibar, after a very difficult election, they have just incorporated the opposition in the government. And the opposition has accepted. Yes, the constitution requires it like that, but they have accepted because they have realized that they need to take the country forward. For the countries which have said that one leader has to lead forever, they are digging graves for those particular countries. And there is no progress. There is no economic progress which is going to go on. There is no political or social progress which is going to go on, which is a shame to our continent.
To both of you briefly, what do you make of the lack of each Africa is divided into regional blocks, where ECOWAS, the East African Community,
yes,
SADC, and in those blocks there are some glimmers of hope and some disappointments. What's the role of those organizations, those blocks? Can they help in making sure there's good governance, or maybe they're just impotent?
I think they're impotent for one particular reason. The African leaders don't have the courage to tell each other the truth. Even those who are doing a good job don't feel like they need to tell the ones in the neighborhood, the ones across the border, the ones within their regional bloc that, hey, you are not doing the right thing in your country. They have this brotherly kind of feeling that they feel that, you do whatever you're doing over there, I'm doing whatever I'm doing over here, and let's be friends. So until such a time when these blocks can mean something, where they can have set rules and say, hey, my brother, we do not agree with what you're trying to do in your country, or you need to do better than this, those blocks will just end up being like the Africa Union, a toothless bulldog that is just there to create moments of fraternizing, coming together, wasting a lot of money and time just to talk to each other about mostly nothing.
Suleiman, what do you think?
They are important, as Vincent has said, but what is ironical is that the mismanagement in this particular country directly affects them. When Zimbabwe blew up, it is we in South Africa who have paid the price. Up to today, I believe the economy of South Africa is greatly affected because of the Zimbabwean crisis, because there was an influx of over 2 million people, which the country was not ready for. When now in East Africa, DRC has been unstable, all the surrounding countries are affected. Now in Uganda, they are going for a turbulent election, which might lead to violence because it's already violent. If violence flares up, Kenya will be affected. So Tanzania will be affected. We are going for a protracted civil war maybe in Ethiopia. If Ethiopia erupts, all the surrounding countries will be affected. Southern Sudan affected all countries. So their importance does not help. It only benefits the leaders because for them they are comfortable. But for the citizens on the ground in all the countries, those affected and those which are relatively well-led, still they are all affected. One rotten tomato affects all the others in the basket. So there is no way they are going to run away from it. It's just poor leadership. One would wish would get people like Kama, because Kama, when he was still a leader in Botswana, he rose up. He put up his voice against Mugabe. And at one time he said this Mugabe had to step down. But unfortunately, he was let down by the other people, the other countries, which he never gave him support. But one would wish that they come with the realization that it affects their very, very countries if there is confusion and bad governance in the neighboring country.
So in a few words, Vicente, which will affect the other? Good governance will spread or spread? Which one do you take? Very briefly, in about 10 seconds.
It will take a long time, but eventually good governance should influence the bad governance in the neighborhoods.
Suleiman?
The youth now, the globalization which is affecting the world, the youths are so connected, they are so informed. The Arab Spring seems to be permeating, because you can feel the ground shaking in Zimbabwe, the ground shaking in Ethiopia, the ground shaking in Uganda, the Central African Republic, Chad. You can feel there is some movement on the ground by the youths. Maybe eventually good governance would overtake, and then people will come to their senses and realize that it is late for them to continue with the status quo.
I see. Well, let's hope for the best for the continent. And that wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Makori, Managing Editor, VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, as always, thanks a lot.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You're very much welcome. We're back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. All you have to do is go to our main website, click on Programs, and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, wishing you all the best.
In the news, moderator Shana Estulin and a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week, including the U.S. leads the world in total cases and deaths of the coronavirus, according to Johns Hopkins University. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices.